Hey folks, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that we used to record here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach once a week on Mondays. But since the shift to distance learning and coronavirus, we do daily episodes here in the house or in walks around the neighborhood, trying to stay sane, stay healthy, and stay home during this time of unprecedented online learning. So our podcasts are daily with new tips and tricks, ideas, and strategies to get your kids excited in your classrooms, keep yourself sane when you're working from home. As an instructional coach, I work with teachers all different content areas, all different ages of students. And in my own school, I do have my own classes, two sections of American literature. So it's hard to do all these things and keep students engaged and excited. This week's topics, we're talking about binge-worthy learning and building lessons that gets our kids excited about the big picture while wanting to dig deeper and dive toward, closer looks at things too. You didn't have a chance to check out yesterday's episode. We talked all about Tiger King, speaking of binge-worthy things, Netflix. And like I said, there's a new episode today, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So yeah, message me. Let me know how we can connect and keep the conversation rolling all week long. New episodes every weekday. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to like or subscribe. Leave a comment on your favorite podcasting app. It helps other people find it, which is awesome. Thank you for that. I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU. That's Meehan like my last name and EDU like teaching. I love teaching. I want to get better at it. I want to connect with teachers who get better at it. I don't pretend to be an expert. I just pretend to be a guy who does a lot of the work as a researcher, as a writer, as an author, as a speaker, as a presenter. And as a guy who leads PD through his building and really places all over the United States, I'm just taking my sponge, dipping it into the waters, and then squeezing it out. So this is what I'm learning. I don't pretend to have all the answers. So yeah, let's keep the conversation rolling on Twitter, at MeehanEDU. Also have a website, www.adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline with an E, like educational adrenaline, because I'm fired up to teach, and I have a bunch of templates and resources, things that I share there. Happily, gladly, freely, take them, use them, steal them, share them, and put them in place in your classroom. Let me know how it works. I think the big secret about education is that we don't teach content, we teach kids. And so figuring out what makes kids excited is the very difference between our having a successful year and a struggle year. And not that there aren't struggles that are part of the successful years too, but we were yesterday in our podcast talking about Netflix and the idea of binge-worthy learning, creating lesson plans, creating activities that feel like limited-run television programs, whether it was Tiger King, right? Everybody and their brother and sister were talking about Tiger King. It was like train wreck television. You couldn't look away from it. But before that, it was like The Office or The Walking Dead or Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones. It's like destination television in the zeitgeist where it's not literary fiction, it's genre fiction, and there's a big difference, right? Like, literary fiction is nuanced and character-driven and, like, it's subtle stuff, but it's like pop culture. It's like, oh man, you have to see the latest episode, because this episodic television is building to this big reveal, this mid-season finale, or oh my god, did you see the big twist? Whether it's the Red Wedding on the Game of Thrones, if you have HBO, or like the latest episode of The Bachelor, the big, you know, who got voted off the island on Survivor, whatever it is. You create this idea of an event, and people can't help but want to tune in and see that event. And so how do we take our lesson plans, which are now distance learning asynchronous, you know, to use the buzzwords of education, and make them feel like must-see limited-run series is, there's a sentence, the series is, for the web. Because we have to roll it out every Monday, almost like a television producer. And yesterday I talked about teach like Tiger King. Maybe today's podcast is like teach like a producer. Putting together a week's worth of content, if you had to envision your year and say, all right, if we have to do distance learning for the rest of this quarter or the rest of this calendar year or for all of next school year, you know, or maybe you go back to school, but then you have to re-adjourn again for, you know, distance learning is another part of it. How do you put programming on your docket that makes people want to stop what they are doing and tune in to what your class is going to drop their new binge-worthy series every Monday? And I think that this is a chance for, you know, I'm going to use a word that feels inappropriate for education. I don't mean it in the traditional sense, but in the marketing business, before I worked in teaching, I worked in social media and event planning, trying to get people to come to events and ultimately to give money. So we have to get people comfortable, you know, giving a little bit of their cash away or giving a little bit of their attention or their time away. And the marketing term that people use is sexy. Like, is this sexy enough? Is it the type of thing that has the, quote, sex appeal? And I don't mean like romantic sex appeal, but like, is it provocative enough? Is it alluring? Is it seductive? Certainly not appropriate when you're talking about like adults and children and like nothing like that. I'm not saying like that at all. I'm saying in the language of marketing speak, something that is sexy is designed to be getting somebody to raise their eyebrow enough that they want to click a little more or give a little more or lean a little further. Ooh, this is interesting. Because it has just that right amount of, to use the Tiger King examples, like the salaciousness, right? The shock value, almost the tawdry appeal. While at the same time, not just being exploitative. I mean, I said I worked, you know, in public relations and in media marketing, but I did it for a Catholic school. So like, how do you be Catholic but also sexy, right? You want to draw people into like the cause, but in a way that's still wholesome and aligned with your values of your institution. Certainly in education, it's the same thing. In Dave Burgess's book, Teach Like a Pirate, he gives the example of, he has a sign that says, the number one secret to become a better lover when he gives his presentations. And people... he just leaves that sign up as he's about to give his presentation. And everybody can't wait to know what's on the other side of that sign. What's the big reveal? Look at the movie Seven. You know, like, what's in the box? People see that box. People see that sign. People see that dangling carrot, but they're not allowed to have it yet. And they want it. So how do we use that suspense to draw people in? Because there's a big difference between suspense and surprise, right? Surprise is you just drop something on somebody and they never saw anything coming. Surprise, boom, something loud happens, something big happens. But suspense is you give them a hint that there's something to come later. And I promise you, stay tuned, because number four will shock you, right? That BuzzFeed list. So how do we design our lesson plans like a producer would, that we're trying to have that sex appeal? It's like tonight on The Bachelor, stay tuned because blah, 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 blah. To have somebody put in their head, ooh, appointment television, every Tuesday night I have to tune in at 9 o'clock because there's a new episode of blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, every third Wednesday, I can't wait to see this website because blah, 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 blah. Or in our classrooms, what is the, you know, the hook or the dangling carrot or the sex appeal that's going to draw people to want to take time away from Tiger King and TikTok and Snapchat and Fortnite and Apex League of Legends and, you know, Madden or Mario Kart? What's the thing that's going to make them say, all right, that stuff is fun, but I got to see this stuff because everyone's going to be talking about it in a day. And designing our classrooms with that idea of that appeal, like a show, new, limited release, you know, limited run series, only 4 or 5 or 6 episodes. You don't want to miss this. Again, as an English teacher, I have found some success tapping into some of the more, provocative elements from some of the stories that I have taught. But it changes the way I'd have to teach a story traditionally. I'll give an example immediately. And I do apologize. People say, like, these podcasts or my tweets are helpful for them if they're in the humanities classes, but, like, harder if they're in a math science. And I don't disagree. Math science is a different animal altogether. We can spend more time talking about some of the resources. There's some great, great educators out there who are doing some awesome stuff to make math feel, quote, sexy or, you know, like, attractive. Right off the top of my head, I think Stacey Roshan does an awesome book called Tech with Heart. She tweets under the name BuddyXO, and she is an amazing resource as a math teacher about how to design flipped and blended and hybrid lessons that makes your students want to tune in for more episodes of what you have to say next in math. So I could just, you know, put that pin in that. I'm talking about my own class for a second. If I gave a traditional short story, what I would do is, all right, guys, this weekend, go home, read the short story. When we come back in class, we're going to discuss it on Monday and Tuesday. Maybe there would have to be some discussion questions or some dialogue, a Socratic seminar, or some group activity when they come in on Monday. And we spend Monday or Tuesday kind of taking the story apart, and right back to the next story we would go Wednesday, Thursday, something like that. Well, it works different in an online learning environment. And I have to, again, sort of whet the appetite, or as Dave Burgess, again, uses in that Teach Like a Pirate book, like preheat the grill to get your students programmed to receive that there is a story coming that's going to be worth their attention. I'll give you an example. And I'm going to use English because that's just my content area. I'm moving into a short story unit on the fiction of Flannery O'Connor, a great author of the American South, the Southern Gothic, this existential 1950s, great short fiction, highly symbolic, about a time in the United States when all morals were kind of being reimagined. This reconstruction, the fall of the old aristocracy of the South, and like putting together a value paradigm in an era, like almost in response to modernism in the 1950s. Okay, fine. So Flannery O'Connor is tough. It's existential. It's like heavy and it's very heady. How do I get kids remotely to give a hoot about this? How do I get sex appeal out of what is effectively a sermon? Because her stories have, fictional elements. There's characters, there's plot, there's setting, but really they're all morals. They're deep-seated, like, meditations on how to be a better person. She's highly, highly Catholic in her own writing. So how do I get kids excited? Like, how do I trick kids into want to read almost small, like, Mysteries and Manners, as she calls the name of her own biography, Mysteries and Manners of the South. And so what I had to do to kind of preheat that grill or to sort of set that trap or that sex appeal, again, like thinking like a producer, before the unit begins, I'll send out a Google survey and I'll say, hey, students, take a look at these three possible choices. I won't give them the name of the story. I'm just going to give an excerpt of the story and maybe like a little Netflix-sized blurb describing what is about to unfold in story A versus story B versus story C. So example, a deformed carpenter arrives at the step of a remote farm as a mother raises her disabled daughter. It looks like he's there for ill intentions, but could he be a savior in disguise? Ooh, right? Now that's story number one, right? Story number two, two absentee parents entrust their child to the care of a woman on her way to a religious revival service. But as she heads to the river, what sins will be washed clean? Ooh, right, that's story number two. Story number three, a Bible salesman shows up on the doorstep of a woman and her atheist daughter. The con is on, but who's taking advantage of who? Ooh, right? Like, so we have three different stories here, and one of them is Flannery O'Connor's The Life You Save May Be Your Own. That's the first one. The second is called The River, and the third is called Good Country People. Those three stories are presented without the name of the stories for a reason. One, I don't want the kids to just see how long the story is and then be like, I don't want to read it. It's too long. I'm going to pick the short one. And two, I want them to actually look into that little episode guide with like a sneak peek or a preview of what the heck is going on here, because I want them leaning forward. I want to give them just a little bit, but not too much. Almost like a commercial for the unit that's about to come. As a producer of a TV show, I've now sort of like whet their appetite and then said, okay, you read preview one, preview two, preview three. Which of these three stories do you feel like you would want to read the most? And tell me why. Quick Google form, push it out, good to go. Every student in class, that's their assignment to then say, look, based on the three descriptions here, I like episode one because blah, 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 blah. There's metacognition. There's a vote. There's like a rooting interest. And then, evilly, like, I can kind of see behind the curtain who's saying what and what things are appealing to my students. And then, playing to the things that are of interest to them, I can design and push my, quote, marketing materials to get the unit to where I need it to be. So if I have, and I like I said, I teach two sections of American literature, so I have about 40, 45 kids between the two classes. Based on their feedback, maybe like 25 kids like the first story, 7 like the second story, and then the balance of them, like 17 or so, like that last story. Okay. Well, that tells me that number one has the appeal, the sexiness, right? The idea of what makes my students excited to want to be a part of that. And then those tawdry, sort of exploitative, some sort of weird, grotesque elements that are later in the story, I can start to just gradually seed the conversation with, hey guys, it sounds like what you care about is stories of intrigue and deception, stories of the grotesque, stories of like devils in disguise or saviors in sheep's clothing. Ooh, interesting. So I wonder what it would look like if, but again, I'm not giving them the full story to look at yet. I'm spending more time in the pre-teach getting them fired up about the world of this story. Then, before I even go any further, I'll be like, all right, guys, I know you picked this story based on majority rules, good to go. Or if you wanted to, you know, you can say, okay, 7 kids picked that one, 8 kids picked this one, 10 kids picked that one, whatever you wanted to do. Ultimately, they're still digging for symbolism and searches for mysteries and manners and meaning and, you know, like in these meditations, these stories. But I haven't given them the story yet. I'm not letting them do that. I'm giving that idea of we're going to build and build and build to the point where when that story finally drops, you can't wait to dive in and tear it apart, almost like an Easter egg hunt. When you got to your mom and dad's house, if you're from a Christian tradition and it was Easter, and you had your own kids or when you were a child yourself, you'd wake up on Easter morning and you'd see outside in the lawn all those brightly colored eggs popping up through the grass, but they wouldn't let you go outside yet. They wouldn't let you go grab it. So you'd like kind of pretend like you weren't looking out the window, but secretly you're trying to suss out, oh man, here's my plan of attack. I'm going to grab that and that and that and that and that. So before we get into our story, I've already given 3 or 4 different swings of the bat. Hey, why do you like this one? Ooh, so that sounds interesting. Would you be interested in blah, 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 blah? Maybe now I'll give them a short video. Maybe we'll watch a Beyonce video. you know, there's so much about the Southern Gothic tradition that she pulls into her music videos. Find a clean version of something that is school appropriate. Be like, hey guys, before we watch this video, I want you to watch this, or before we read the story, I want you to watch a short video. It's Beyonce. You guys know her, right? Talk about the Southern Gothic elements that you're noticing here, and talking about like the Spanish moss, the crumbling aristocracy, these old plantations falling apart, these very clear issues of racial conflict, this oppression of the female, and like this attempt to be liberated. These are all themes that are borrowed from the very same tradition we're about to get into, but I show them that, I don't say anything. And that's not an explicit teaching thing. It just says, almost like an egg hunt, watch this Beyonce video. Tell me 5 things that you've noticed, or 10 things that you've noticed, or 5 things that feel spooky or creepy. Now they've kind of practiced, okay, I've done the Easter egg hunt, I'm ready to go, I have some ideas. And they're excited to do that exact same thing when I say, all right, guys, based on your feedback, based on your votes, and based on the work I've seen so far, the story we will be reading is... And just like that, I can pause, right? Take a breath. And they're excited. They want to see more of it. And I'm finding in my own teaching that gets students really fired up to lean in, to want to do more, which is really good. If I can get that excitement going, building that hype, building that, you know, groundswell of support, it does take a little bit more time in the pre-teaching. But they're willing to do so much more work. And ultimately, they yield when they did this short analysis or the read of the story. I'll talk more about what that could look like in tomorrow's episode. That, for me, gets me really excited because I can ride that momentum, that energy, and approach my, quote, novel study unit, now becoming a short story unit, in a way that's still, even though it's asynchronous, highly immersive and really engaging. And that's what good binge learning is able to do. More tomorrow, we'll talk more about a specific deep dive into, okay, so what does it look like to get into the brass tacks of it? Again, I'm not pretending to have answers for everything. I'm giving case studies of things that I'm seeing working for me and for the teachers who I think are doing amazing work. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe, stay home, stay healthy. Message me, and we'll be back tomorrow with more. God bless, stay safe, thanks.